Accession number 28698, reel 23.
Everybody was a little bit down that we'd lost so many light infantrymen in one go. And in July 87, it had been an extremely busy and violent tour for Tourlie. In fact, it had been more violent since any other tour going back till 1976. Several other battalions had been shot or blown up, but none of them had been killed. And the IRA were getting more and more sophisticated and were starting to use command wire initiated explosive devices. And the IRA were changing their mode of operations against the British Army. And they were getting really sophisticated. And the battalion had a hard tour. So they were down a little bit. The morale was quite low when I took over. And it was only a few months after that that the commanding officers changed over. And Jim Parker left to be a full colonel in Ireland. In fact, he didn't. He missed full colonel out, went straight to brigadier in Northern Ireland. And Richard Cousins came in, a man I'd known for, I say, nearly 20 years. And he said to me, had I been the RSM of Wanalei when the soldiers got blown up, what would I have done with the soldiers? And I'd said, I would have made sure that the best friends of the ones who had been killed were the ones who went back to the funeral. Then I'd chuck them straight back into the area of Cross McLean, Falkland and everything to get on soldiering before they were frightened of the situation. And he said, well, I'm glad you said that, because that's what I would have done, but the commanding officer of Wanalei didn't do that. He didn't let the best friends go at the funerals. So then best friends never got to close the circle on the friends that they had lost. So the morale of Wanalei and Tualai was a little bit down. Because Wanalei was still there, and Tualai had just come back from Ireland, and Wanalei was short of men because the amount that had been injured, 8 killed and 27 injured. They asked for volunteers from Tualai to go straight back to Northern Ireland. But the soldiers had to be single, they had to have Northern Ireland experience, and they had to be 100% volunteers. 92 private soldiers, single, qualified for this. And when asked who wanted to go back to Northern Ireland to go with Wanalei, 92 soldiers stepped forward. Only 30 were required, so only 30 were allowed to go. And I think that says it all for the light infantry as a light infantry family. My first exercise back now is RSM with an exercise called exercise Free Lion, which was part of the 1st Netherlands Corps. And it was a formation which included the United States Heavy Troops, the German Panzer Troops, German Recce Troops, and German Paras. American paras and English paras. And it felt good to be back, because my role as the RSM in the helicopter role was to stand there, fetch Chinooks in, and get the companies on board in batch of the 30, one after the other after the other. So it was up to me to fetch them in, load them up, send them out. Next helicopter in, load them up, and send them out. And then the helicopter would then move forward, drop down over an underslung Land Rover, hook on and take the company commander's Land Rover trailer, underslung, and then the next one will come in and pick a net full of mortar bombs up or a net full of ammunition up. And to see them formations going off and your whole battalion flying out in helicopters with their vehicles and ammunition underslung was brilliant. And that was my job as RSM in the field, because I was one, Sam Major, company on parade, batches of 30, go. And the drill absolutely worked perfect. It was good to be back. And then after the exercise, that finished that year off. And then after the big exercise, I actually flew back to UK to Tidworth as part of the recce platoon, ready for our next posting, because we've been told Tidworth was our next posting. Colonel Cousins was in place now, and when we got to Tidworth and we met the commanding officer of the Hampshire Battalion, he said, RSM, where are most of your soldiers from? And I said, Durham and Yorkshire. And he said, then you'll be all right here. My soldiers all come from Hampshire, and fetching the battalion back to my home county I've lost half my battalion because they've left the army and they've gone home to live with their mothers, fathers and brothers, and I've lost half my battalion. Never take your battalion back to the home county, which I bore in mind. Once we had the recce, we went back to Dahlenhofen. We packed our quarters up, said farewell to everybody, and then we came to Tidworth with all our families, lock, stock and barrel, and moved into Lucknow Barracks.
What was Tidworth like as a posting?
It was a garrison town, and it was the first time our battalion was coming back to England since the Wheaton days. And it was the first time we'd been in a garrison for about 15 years. So on my recce, I'd gone down to see the civilian police and the Royal Military Police and said, if my soldiers step out of line, let me know, or my provost sergeant know, do not jail them in your civvy jails or your Royal Regimental Police jails. Let us get settled into the country and then you will have no trouble from us. And I also went to the local pubs and clubs and told them the same. Do not send for the civilian police or the Royal Military Police. Send for me or my military police and we'll arrest them. And that's what we did. And I also said to the SO, if I get anybody for drunken disorderly or for fighting especially, we will jail them for 2 weeks until they get used to the idea is if they step out of line, they know they are going to jail. And that's exactly what we did.
And those would be your own jail in your own battalion?
In our own guard room, in our own barracks.
Just whilst we're on the subject, can we talk about the provost situation in the battalion? How many people were there and what was the structure?
You had a provost sergeant with about six provost corporals and lance corporals. And mostly there were guys who were very, very good, or they'd been bad in their time, knew all the ins and outs, and then made excellent policemen.
Were they well liked by the...
Most were. I had one that certainly was not, and that's because he tried to be too keen, and he was a bit of a snake in the grass. And I kept him for the time I had to keep him, but I wasn't sad to see him go. The other ones were totally loyal to me and the commanding officer. They weren't spies, but they would always keep me abreast and say, RSM, I think you need to know such and such is happening within the battalion. And that way I could keep a lid on it. I could keep the SO informed of what was going on. And I would like to say, touch wood, that I had no problems as RSM with discipline, but I did have Provo and other people in the companies who would approach me as RSM and let me know that things were either right or wrong.
What was the cell situation if you did put somebody, lock them on it?
Cells were exactly what health and safety required. It was your wooden bed, except we gave them mattresses as well. They had proper toilets, proper showers, proper everything else. Anything sharp and sticky out in the walls had all been taken away so people couldn't hang themselves or hurt themselves. But they were basic.
And these are in the guard room, were they, at the entrance to the camp?
They were in our own guard room at the entrance of the camp, and they were built to specifications of the Military Corrective Training Centre in Colchester. They would come and inspect them and say they are fit enough to hold soldiers in. And because they were our own prisoners in our own jail, they got beasted. They had to do what they had to do. Most of them played the game. They didn't want to be in there. They just wanted to do their 2 days, 3 days or 14 days and come out and go back to work.
Did you find a situation where the same person or persons kept appearing in the cells?
If it was the ones for drinking. And some of them were just overnight say, because the rules are, if anybody is brought back to barracks drunk, you must put them in protective custody for no other reason than safety and medical reasons. That way the provost could look at them every 20 minutes to make sure they haven't been sick, they haven't been choking or anything else. Because there'd been several battalions around the world had lost soldiers by being put in a cell or being allowed to go back to bed in their own rooms and nobody looked in and they choked to death. We always put them in the guard room so they could be observed every 20 minutes.
And the kind of punishment duties that would need to be, you would be expecting them to carry out?
They wouldn't wear military uniform. They'd wear military coveralls, and sometimes with the old steel helmet on, just to degrade them slightly. They'd be dressed in these coveralls. They would do dirty jobs around camp, like sweeping the gutters out, keeping the camp clean and tidy, painting the curbstones, all that kind of thing. They would do drill, and I'm sure they enjoyed it because they always end up better soldiers for it. And they would double everywhere, of course, with a knife, fork, spoon behind the back, and they'd double off to meals, but they would march back. They would do Beast and Drill on the square in double quick time.
And what's Beast and Drill?
Well, where the tempo is upped, instead of left, right, it'll be left, right, left, right, left, right, right, about turn, left, right, all that kind of thing. But I'm sure they turned out to be better soldiers for it. They weren't humiliated and punished in any way that was not compatible with the rule books.
Was there any of them carrying their rifles and running around the square? Was that?
No, we didn't do things, but we used to still fill the fire buckets full of sand and make them run around the square with fire buckets full of heavy sand.
And these would be supervised by the regimental police?
The regimental police were supervised at all times, and if it was anything physical, you would either have a member of medical staff on hand or with them, or you would have a PTI, physical training instructor, if you were doing anything that was out of the capabilities of the provost staff.
And then the entrance of the Camber Garden would have its guard?
The
rota guard.
There was only a military guard on one, now we still have RSM, but later it was in the days where we were starting to get MOD police and contracted guard police in, because we couldn't afford to leave people behind when we went on operations. You would need all the soldiers, including the guard.
And were these 24-hour guard?
Provided most
by
of the time,
platoons, companies, etc.?
Yes, well, you'd have a skeleton guard on through the day, just somebody to open the gate and the barrier to let people in and out and check identity. At night time, there was a full armed guard on who used to patrol the camp.
So what happened to you now then? You're now RSM. What date are we talking about? Because you've just moved back from Germany.
Well, we're now back to Germany, and it's 1989. And in the October, we went down to Sennelager for Exercise Yorkshire Canter. The Exercise Yorkshire Canter was just for 2LI, and it was something we set up a few years earlier when challenged by somebody from 4KLI who said during the war they could march 100 miles in 24 hours. So we set out to prove that this could or could not be done with all your kit. So we set the course up down in Sennelager, and the whole battalion, or most of the battalion, attempted to do it. Most people drop out at the 70-mile mark, because if you can't go to do it, you may as well drop out at some time. So they'd run and walk 70 miles, then drop out. However, Lieutenant Richard Fullerton and Sergeant Corker Curran actually did achieve it with all their kit on in 23 hours and 47 minutes. In fact, by that time, most of the battalion had mustered back together and were forming the route for the last mile of the run. And the band and bugles were on parade and started playing the regimental double march. And they doubled in for the last mile to the band and bugles, and the whole of the battalion clapping at the same time. Now, Corker Curran had done Yorkshire Canter in Germany before we left Germany and failed it by about 2 minutes. So this was the second time in 2 years he'd run 100 mile in 24 hours.
And this was basically a running marching situation?
It's running marching non-stop for 24 hours, through the night, through the day.
No breaks?
No breaks, unless they wanted to take a break. It was up to the individual soldier how he thought. And he would be fed Mars bars and pies and anything he could march and carry at the same time for the 24 hours. And people, during the night, from 2 o'clock onwards till about 6 o'clock, they could go stir crazy because it's pitch black and you've got nothing to look at. So friends would take turns and run a few miles with them just to keep them going.
Was it still a part of the activities of the battalion to have route marches regularly?
Oh, yes. You always did your 10-milers because that was mandatory that you had to do your... Well, it was more than 10 miles now because it was your infantry combat fitness test. And you had to do at least something like 5 miles on a road and 5 miles cross-country with your kit on in a certain time. And that was a mandatory infantry combat fitness test. So it had to be done.
And when people went on this, was there a backup for picking anyone up who were having difficulty?
Every group was followed by ambulances, and there was medics en route and everything else. In fact, this particular one got so emotive, and it was covered by the TV cameras, that the lady reporters who were reporting on this event were actually reduced to tears when they saw a whole battalion clapping and two men who had just ran for 100 miles. They got emotive and just burst out crying. We also carried out a few more exercises in that particular period because we were just getting used back into the country. were actually next door, wrong, we'd handed Barossa barracks over in Dahlenhofen to three RRF. And this time we were next to two RRF in the barracks next door to us in Tidworth. And we got on really well with them. And
so are you back in England now?
Yes.
Have you come back from Germany to England?
Yes, yeah. We're back in...
Have you got a date for this?
We're March 18... just like I've gone off track here. It was also in 89 that we lost our Salamanca band to the Light Div Depot, as all battalions in the British Army were, due to costs. They were saying you could only have one regimental band and all single battalions had to lose their bands, which was actually very sad for us. And while I was RSM, all the senior ranks in the band wanted to be presented with their silver-mounted silver bugle. And that's one of the last things I ever did for the band. In Tidworth, we were then, our role had changed. We're finished with Air Mobile now, and we're actually a mechanised Saxon battalion. These are armoured vehicles put on wheels. And for all this was March, we were told we were expected to be fit for all by April. And that was training all our drivers, all our commanders, and everybody else in this new role. And they give us about a month. It didn't actually happen because it took longer than expected to teach the drivers who had never seen Saxon before.
Can you describe a Saxon?
A Saxon was a six-wheeled armoured vehicle that had been originally built for riot control in South Africa, believe it or not. But they were too aggressive for the British Army to use as IS, internal security vehicles. So we put boxes on the side to make them look more square instead of the angled plates that were there to deflect anti-armour missiles, of course. And they turned out to be a very effective armoured taxi to get us into the front as a fighting vehicle. However, they had limitations because they were rubber-wheeled. So depending on the side, of course, Salisbury Plain being white, slimy, chalky sand, once that was wet, we had some near escapes where Saxons were pirouetting down hills. Luckily, nobody hurt.
How many men could you get into a Saxon?
Again, a full section of eight. And then your gunner on top, your commander on top, and your driver in the front. We're also now back in England into the realms of supporting regular armies on RAT tasks. And RAT is Regular Army Assistance Table. And it's a table drawn up by UK Land Forces where battalions are in a peacetime location but are required to train other battalions for Ireland, other battalions for different phases of the war, or as enemy, or to act as permanent range staff while people did their skill at arms. So we got into that realm, which we hadn't done for many a year. And we also then did a consolidated exercise on Salisbury Plain, training area called Silver Saxon, and that was to bring all our training together, that the drivers could drive, the signals could signal, the anti-tanks could anti-tank, and do everything else. But the other thing back in UK, you were also governed by your districts to keep your area clean. That was round your barracks and the local shops. And we used to do area cleaning where we would pick civilian rubbish up in the garrison. It soon stopped when my CO found out what it was all about. But we're also there to clean up Salisbury Plain training area. Especially after big exercises. So the whole battalion was mobilised to pick rubbish up. And D Company alone, in the area they were picking up, around one of the farm areas, they picked 4 10-tonne loads of rubbish up. And the majority of that was civilian rubbish. My CO wasn't happy that we were having to do this. In fact, said as much to the brigade commander and said, anybody wearing a green beret will not pick civilian rubbish up again while I'm the commanding officer. And we never did it again, ever. Although this has been going on since the war. So we never did that again. We were also invited to represent the Light Division in a central television programme called Military Skills Competition Combat 89. And this was every battalion in the British Army, Paras, Gurkhas, Guards, and every other battalion doing this competition on television. And we didn't fare very well at it. Through some minor mistakes that took the points out. And because it was knockout competition, we didn't get much further than the first and second round. It was run by Emily News and Annika Rice, and they loved our soldiers because the sense of humour was second to none. And they said, if we could wish it, we'd wish these guys to win so they'd be on television every week. But after the first couple of weeks, we were never on again.
What kind of tasks were you set to?
Oh, it was map reading tasks where they had to row across a lake to an island. Our people went to the wrong island. Anti-tank tasks, mortar tasks, assault course tasks. And it was absolutely fantastic for the British Army to do this competition down in Wales. But as I say, we didn't get past the first couple of weeks through some silly mistakes. And we were good enough to win it. And Emlyn Hughes nearly cried when we said, "That's us, we're knocked out now." But we had a good time with them. And again, we were also nominated again as the Hunter Force for the Security Forces in Hereford. So the biggest part of the battalion went down again to do work for the SES. In June and August of that year, the battalion then went to Canada on Exercise Pondjump West. And we took 39 Commando Battery Royal Artillery with us, Royal Engineers, a Gazelle flight of the Army Air Corps, and soldiers from 5, 7, and 8 Ally, because 8 Ally had just come on board by then. And then, I was still out there, it was brilliant over there. So we went to Canada and did this most brilliant 6 weeks exercise.
Did you fly out?
Yes, we all flew out.
And whereabouts was it held?
A place called Wainwright in... Wainwright, about 100 clicks west of Edmonton. Fantastic area, prairie and hills, and a fantastic range complex. And again, we went through all our ambush drills and all the other kinds of things that you can't do in England.
That's because of lack of space?
I mean, you had miles and miles so you could fire all your weapon systems out as far as you wanted to go. So we put the whole battalion through its paces, and because of the commando artillery that we had with us, and you, in peacetime, there's a limit that you can fetch your guns down to, or you're getting backsplash off the shrapnel. We brought it right down to the war setting, and we're literally in our trenches, and you could feel the shrapnel whipping into the sand above us.
This was fine, basically, just about ahead of where you were.
Absolutely. We were shot into the attack. I forget the name of the area, but it was to fight a village where the Russians were, if you want. And it was absolutely fantastic. And the anti-tanks were going into it, and the mortars were going into it, and the wrecking were fine. It was one of the most beautiful exercises I got, because we didn't have the restrictions that you have in England. The prairies were so big and so wide, you could fire till your heart's content.
Were the Canadian troops with you, or this was purely battalion?
No, it's just battalion. A battalion battle group.
How did you find the Canadians? Did you get much chance to...
I mean, we socialised with them in the messes and in the bars and that, and they were fantastic. Straightforward, spade as a spade, soldier. Unlike the Americans that we went with the year after.
Well, we'll come to that, of course.
So we did our 6 weeks exercise. It was fantastic, the morale for the battalion, and it was exactly what we needed. And then we had to go back then to Tidworth, and we sent people out on Cape tours to Shropshire and Herefordshire, and to Avon and Yorkshire and Durham. Cape tours being keeping the army in the public eye, because we were starting to realise then, it was our first time back in England, people hadn't seen us, we weren't advertising ourselves, and if you don't sell yourself, nobody's going to buy you. So we sent teams and platoons and companies out to all the different areas where we recruit from to remind people to join the light infantry. At the same time, we also ran the UK Land Force sniper concentration, because the trouble with the British Army, we keep having snipers and seeing the value of them, because we use them extensively in Ireland, or we did in the 70s, and then we stopped training them, and then we realised we need to train snipers. And we were given the job by UK Land Forces to train the whole of the British Army snipers again. So off we went to Senlager and did that.
But what kind of training do you put a would-be sniper through?
Oh, it's a set-piece course, which is concealment, camouflage, movement, sniping up to 1,000 metres, and moving several yards in front of somebody observing you so slow that they can't see you move. It's one of the hardest courses you'll ever do.